ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a going home. My baby just wrote me a letter.
Some more reading. I get all these letters. Bart, please read to us some more. Headline, prison abuses, beheading, don't compare. I read with horror and disgust about Nick Berg's beheading in Iraq. The Abu Ghraib prison incidents I read with horror and disgust about Nick Berg's beheading in Iraq. The prison incidents barely pale in comparison. Why do I keep saying that? I read with horror and disgust about Nick Berg's beheading in Iraq. The prison incidents absolutely pale in comparison to this barbaric act. While our president and secretary of defense have publicly apologized for the actions of subordinates, no, Rummy gave the order, accused of abuse, I doubt there will be an apology coming from the terrorists. Well, duh. What further disgusts me is that I am confident the story will get about 2% of the traction of the Abu Ghraib story. All the media involved in the public release of the Ghraib photos should be rounded up and prosecuted for treason for the damage they've caused to the mission in Iraq. Yeah, it's the press's fault that they put pink panties on these guys and made them masturbate for a camera. Darn the press, always doing too good a job as a watchdog. That's what we got here. The press is doing, they're too tough on Bush. They won't give the poor man any breathing room because they're too tough on him. Maintain resolve in Iraq. The slaying of Nick Berg in Iraq is no doubt devastating. However, we cannot let it hinder our plans to rebuild Iraq into a better country. No, that's not why we went to Iraq. We went to Iraq to save the East Coast from Saddam's WMD drones. Why do these people keep lying to themselves? In a way, you kind of expect them to lie to each other, but these are people... Oh, Christ, it's an eighth grader, it says. So we forgive the eighth grader. He's got Nazi parents. But people keep lying to themselves. We died to free Iraq. No, we didn't. We died to... The real reason is to make the BFEE richer, but one of the first original claims was that we were going to self-defense. And then it changed from there into, well, we're going to build a free nation. And then it changed into, oh, we got a plan to spread democracy. And then it changed into, well, we're going to fight them somewhere. You don't want to fight them in Manhattan, do you? Might as well fight them over there in the desert. Like, yeah, like it was their plan all along to set a trap. Let's go to Iraq and set a trap. And we'll pretend that we're in a lot of trouble. And all the terrorists will come in. And once we get them all rounded up in one little pile, poof, we'll just nuke them, and we'll just be done with terrorism, and all the terrorists in Malaysia and across the world, and South Pago Pago, and Yemen, and the Philippines, and Saudi Arabia, yeah, they'll all just stop. They'll see how mad we were, and they'll say, oh, we don't want none of that. These people live to die for their religion. We never fought an enemy like this before. They want to die. That's their goal. Religion did that to them. Their parents told them, if you go murder a white guy, you get all the virgins. Well, whoop-de-doo. 80 days later, you've been through each virgin. Now what do you got? A dead ass and no virgins. 90 days later, you got no virgins. You threw away the 30 or 50 or 80 years you might have on this earth for 90 days of good sex. And now you got no virgins. What do you got? You might as well be in Vegas. You might as well rob a bank, go to Vegas, have 90 hookers, and then go to jail. Being in jail is better than being dead, right? Maybe. I don't know. Never been to jail. But in closing, people need to stop lying to themselves. Rush lies. We understand that. He's making $500,000 a day. That probably breaks down to, $5,000 a lie. We understand why he's lying. But these people lying to themselves, they just kill me. One more letter. USA Today. Where is the good news? Justin Ringling, as in Barnum and Bailey, wants to know. He's from Westerly, Rhode Island. Where is the good news? I can no longer take the way the media are reporting the situation in Iraq. I was under the impression it was the media's job to report both sides of a story, which can and should include the good, the bad, and sometimes the ugly. Well, how cute. He worked in a movie title into his little rant. Isn't that cute? Don't you hate it when some guy tries to write funny? Oh, I shouldn't talk. I am so tired of seeing all the bad things going on in Iraq. We all know that the situation can be much better. That's true. It could be a whole lot better. It could be 100 times better. Or it could be so much more than 100 times better that we didn't get into it. Monkey actually stumbled into something correct. We all know the situation can be much better. Yep. Because it is so bad, it almost has to be. Any other situation would have to be better. Are you really telling me that everyone else, wait, are you really telling me and everyone else that there is nothing good happening there? I don't understand why they do this. They say, well, sure, 20 Marines were murdered yesterday, but you didn't mention anything about the school that we built. You didn't mention anything about the school that we wired for electricity. You didn't mention anything about the bathrooms we built for the school. Well, gee, let me think. Iraqi school gets new bathrooms. 20 Marines shot dead? I wonder which one we should put with the big letters on the front page. This monkey's got it all wrong, you know. Think how many years, 10 years, 11 years now we've had to deal with Black Hawk down, 18 men are dead. Oh, it's what happens when a bungler gets in the White House. Oh, let's talk about Mogadishu again. We've only talked about it 8,000 times. Let's talk about it 10,000 times, because remember, 18 men died. Now, nobody feels more for those men than I do, but 18 is not 800. Where do these idiots get their priorities? 800 dead? That's okay. Bush is a genius. 18 dead? Damn that Clinton. Oh, draft-dodging Clinton. Clinton killed those 18 men. But the 800 we lost in Iraq, things happen. You got to understand, Bush is a genius. God told him to. God has a plan. If we shut up and close our eyes and pray, it'll all be over. It just is really insane when you... God told me to invade Afghanistan, and then God told me to invade Iraq. Oh, God and Bush are a team. I think, praise the Lord. This is really pissing me off. All right, let's get out of here. Why have I not heard any reporting from the Kurdish section in Iraq? Well, I don't know. What the hell's going on in the Kurds in the north? I guess there hadn't been a whole lot of dead Marines up there. Maybe that's why we hadn't heard much about it. Every day I read stories about the deaths of soldiers, civilians, and even the enemies. Are you telling us that this is the only thing going on? Yes, in a war, you tend to cover the dead people and the crap that blew up. It's called a war. What are you supposed to report on a war? Wilson's on second. Pitcher glances at first. No throw. He pitches. No, you don't. That's a baseball game. You see, war is when the people die and get blown up. And a baseball game is when you're trying to pick a guy off first or second base. This guy wants us to report from the war, the good news from the war. Well, the good news from the war is we only lost 5 today. Is that the kind of good news this monkey wants? Why don't you let us know about some of the good things going on over there from Justin Ringling. 800 dead, and Justin expects silence. Even this idiotic whore media that's lazier than anything I've ever seen, even they are bothering to report that there's 800 dead. I mean, I gotta admit, I'm a little shocked that they actually are reporting something, A, that's true, and B, that's relevant to, well, let's say the election coming up. How about that? The media got one half right. If they would only do their... Had they done their jobs in 2000, President Gore would have handled this a whole lot differently. He would have gone into Afghanistan with a monsoon of Marines, and he would have stayed there, and we'd have bin Laden 90 days after we landed. But no, Bush smelled that oil, just like he smelled in Texas all those bankrupt companies. I need a drink.
And we'll be ready for the start of the 129th Preakness Stakes. They are in the gate. And they're off. Marty Jones gets off to a good beginning. Little Matt Mann was shuffled back. So, too, was Sir Shackleton. Lionheart down toward the inside. Smarty Jones comes away with an early lead. But there goes Lionheart with his typical early tack. And Mike Smith is angling him out as they head for the clubhouse turn, forcing Smarty Jones a little out into the track. Uncharacteristic speed from Imperialism, who's right up on the pace today. He's running third as they move into the clubhouse turn, but he's very wide. Smith really taking them out there into the track. Song of the Sword saves ground all the way. He's running along in fourth. Sir Shackleton shuffled back early. Is fifth. Eddington sixth in and among horses. Rockhart 10 is under a hard hold early. Four wide round the clubhouse turn. And down toward the inside it is Borrego. Water Cannon at the back of the pack today. And Little Math Man. 23-3 for the opening quarter. And Lionheart is loose on the lead down the backstretch run. 47-1 over the deep track at Pimlico today for the opening half mile. So it is Lionheart in front. And the Derby winner, Smarty Jones, runs along in second. Jorge Chavez moving early with Song of the Sword with five furlongs to go. They're running along in third. Imperialism is in the clear on the far outside. He's fourth. Sir Shackleton is fifth. Jerry Bailey wants more from Eddington. He's not getting it yet. And there goes Rockhart 10, who rolls up on the outside and around the far turn. Mike Smith is giving Smarty Jones the rail. He remains well off the rail with three furlongs to go on Lionheart. An inviting opening on the inside for Smarty Jones. And Rockhart 10 is uncoiling that massive stride of his. He is third as they come to the top of the stretch. And as they hit the top of the stretch, Smarty Jones has taken the lead. It is Smarty Jones in front. Lionheart doing his best, but he's second. Rockhart 10 is third as they come into the final furlong of the 129th Precinct. And it is Smarty Jones. He's pulling away. He's pulling away to win impressively here. Rockhart 10 second on the inside. He's going to win by a colossal margin. Here is Smarty Jones. He wins the Preakness by a dozen lengths. He remains undefeated. And it's on to Belmont. This Philadelphia story continues its magical way to the elusive Triple Crown. Rockhart 10 was second and was close for third. The final time was 1 minute 55 and 2 seconds. This is special.
Oh, did he ever do it. Smarty Jones, the Philly Flyer, turned the Preakness into a runaway. No problem. Stuart Elliott said, let's go, big fella. And they rolled home to win the Preakness and now set sail for Belmont Park and the Belmont Stakes and a chance for racing history as 3 weeks from now, hopefully they'll take to the gate for the Belmont Stakes. Wow, Smarty Jones and Stuart Elliott devastating the field.
Wow. I've heard that race called probably 10 times. We replayed it probably 3-4 times, and then I've heard it another 6, transporting it over to the audio here. And it's just amazing. After 10 listens, the hair still stands up on the back of my head when he's calling that race. Wow, what a race. And what was cool, as the horses were coming around the final turn, Smarty Jones was making his move, but you can't really tell because the horses were essentially running right towards the camera. And when two horses are running towards you, you can't tell that one's a foot closer than the other because they're, you know, a quarter mile away. And you just can't, when they're running side by side, you can see, but when they're running towards you. So this guy gets overwhelmed when he realizes that the favorite, the big magic Smarty Jones, has taken the lead and is going to win this race. Check this out.
Smarty Jones has taken the lead.
Boy. Well, that's something. I cannot wait for that last race. If this horse can pull that off, I mean, I don't know what it'll do. I guess Philadelphia is going to have a big party. It's just hard. It's like a really, really good song condensed into 2 minutes. And, you know, I can't explain the emotional thing there. But, yeah, that is the most exciting 2 minutes in the world. A funny happened on Dave the other night. Wanted to see if I could translate it for you. You know, Dave, the old Dave used to be a lot funnier. The kooky Dave, the let's throw some watermelons off the roof Dave. You know, he would just do funny things. Remember, he had the monkey cam. He had the, oh, he just was always doing something funny. In his older age, a little less testosterone, a little, lot more money, a little less energy. He's kind of settled into, you know, and I think it was an attempt to get back some of the old spark. They usually shoot Dave's show, I think, about 5 o'clock New York time. No, 5 o'clock Bangkok time. On Thursdays, he does 2 shows, so he does one like at 5 and then one at 7. Attempt to spice things up, they said, let's do a show starting at 4 o'clock in the morning. Of course, it'll be on at the regular time because nobody will wake up 4 in the morning to see it, but they did the show at 4 in the morning. So that presented some opportunities, and it presented some problems. As you know, every Friday, Paul does his I'm Lost in the Wilderness, his combination Blood, Sweat, and Tears, James Brown, She Done Left Me, That Bad Bitch song. Every time he does it, there's a different guest star comes out. This was the first time they'd ever done the show outside, and it was cold. It was cold. It was 4 a.m. in New York in mid-May, and from the look on Paul's face, it was cold. Now, you have to know how the bit goes. Paul comes out, and she just tore him up so bad. She just wrecked him so emotionally, he falls to one knee the whole time he's singing the blues. Oh, it's so horrible, you know. And the guest star is supposed to come out and drape this giant cape around him. And the shtick is that, you know, Paul's in such emotional distress that the person with the cape is, I don't know, it's a Let's Go cape. And the person helps Paul, and he helps Paul off, you know, like backstage is how they normally do it. But this time, Paul's doing it outside. He's in the middle of like 45th and Broadway. He's apparently very near Dave's. But he's doing this right dead center in the center of the street. They paid for a permit to close the two streets so Paul could stand right, or kneel, right in the middle of the intersection of, maybe it was Broadway, maybe it was the next street over, and sing this blues song. And remember, the normal way is to put the cape on him, and then as you lead Paul off the stage, he breaks free. No, I can't be saved. I'm just so lost in the, and he falls down on his knees and sings some more. And then the person holding the cape walks off with the cape over his arm, shaking his head like, oh, it was so sad. I tried to save him, but I couldn't. So remember now, Paul's outside. They put the cape on, and they leave with the cape. But it was different this time because they're outside, and Paul is freezing his balloonies off. Apparently, the guy is supposed to put the cape on Paul, and then Paul rejects the cape, and the guy is supposed to put the cape back on Paul because it's 4 a.m. and the wind's blowing and he's freezing. So listen to what Paul did. Paul looked very, very cold, and once he got that cape on him, he continued to sing, but him and that fella just sprinted back to the theater. Oh, and by the way, in case you're wondering, it wasn't a guest star this time. It was a bellman, a doorman, you know, one of those guys in the outfits. I guess he's a doorman. We don't have those in Oklahoma, so I'm not used to them. Paul apparently was cold.
Bart Cop Radio. Everybody's listening to it.